Hello, friends, and welcome to the Healing Ground Movement. Now, for more content and bonus features, you can join us on Facebook and Instagram. And remember, all of our content is delivered freely, so please consider supporting the show by donating via the link on our website at healinggroundmovement.com or liking and reviewing the podcast on your favorite platform.
Enjoy today's episode.
Today's episode is brought to you by the incredible Rad Roller Mobility Tools, my absolute favorite tools for self-myofascial release for at-home treatment for all aches, pains, and mobility issues. Check out the link in our show notes below and use the special offer code HEALING20 to get a special 20% discount on your first order. Enjoy today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Healing Ground Movement Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Carly Hudson. And with us today, we have Jerry Page Butner, who is a former startup and corporate marketing leader, who is going to tell us a little bit about her story and journey towards health. She turned towards becoming a business coach and entrepreneur. After a decade of launching brands and growing businesses from the ground up, she broke free of the 9-to-5 hustle to make a living on her own terms doing what she loves. Leveraging her high-impact business Firestarter framework, Jerry helps aspiring and current small business owners start and grow businesses they love. But more importantly for our listeners here today is that Jerry came up against some hard realities of burning the midnight oil and supporting her health. And so she's going to share her amazing story of just how you can have a job that you love, that inspires you, but also have your health as well. So Jerry, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Carly. It's great to be here.
Well, to just get started and dive right in, tell us a little bit about the work life that you did have, the work you were doing, and sort of how these needs for changing sort of snuck up on you.
Yeah, so I think it's important to note that my foundation of health, I was born and raised in the South in a lower income area. There wasn't a lot of healthy habits incorporated. And so I joined the corporate world. I joined the high pass pace of work with not a great foundation of health, or even, to be honest, an understanding or knowledge of what health is. So for me, it was like, oh, I got an iced tea instead of a soda. That was healthy. But you look and it's maybe the same or comparable amounts of sugar. So that's sort of the baseline of where I was standing in, and without any mental or emotional tools. So I dove into the marketing world straight out of college and climbed the corporate ladder to become a head of marketing in a fintech company whenever I was just 30 years old. And so the amount of work and hours and energy that I put into this and to climb that quickly and to launch brands and to build businesses from the ground up was a lot. And furthermore, it wasn't just my work. It was what I assigned my identity to. So you ask like, oh, like, hi, who are you? Da-da-da. Always leading with, well, I do this. This is my job. This is my work. And so it wasn't just money. It was, I was putting all of this energy into who I thought I was. Mm-hmm. And so as I climbed, I never really felt a sense of fulfillment, but I thought, oh, it'll come whenever I reach that salary that will give me freedom. It'll come whenever I reach that title, that level, whenever I have the team, when I'm working in an even bigger and bigger organization. And so it just so happened that I reached that level and the lack of fulfillment was still there. And I was completely burnt out. I had experienced depression for the majority of my adult life. And to be in especially living in a colder area like Boston, to be in a room with circulated air without natural sunlight, staring at a screen without access to healthy, convenient food day in, day out was certainly having a toll on that as well. And so I didn't know exactly what the problem was. I just knew I needed to remove myself from the situation. And so I packed up my backpack and went on a solo journey to Vietnam and Bali, eat, pray, love style.
I love that. Well, and you really,
paint a really vivid picture of how we can so slowly sort of arrive at this place where the burnout and the depression and all of these things that weigh on us can be so insurmountably big, you know, to start, and we'll come back to this later, I'm hoping, but when we start with a lack of foundation and understanding of health, we kind of start with a hole in the bucket to begin with. It reminds me of the allegory of the frog that goes through the slow boil. Put a frog in a pot, and if you just slowly turn up the water a little bit at a time, the frog doesn't know it's being boiled until all of a sudden the water's jumping and there's no way out. And I think your story can really resonate with a lot of our listeners, that we never set out on a journey to end up, you know, without health and without purpose and just having the only option to be to leave. But we do the best we can each step of the way, attaching our goals to what we know. And, you know, for you, it sounds like those goals were attached to the identity of success. And what a moment that must have been to have achieved that success and to not have the fulfillment that was, in a sense, promised to you by the cultural givens in which you were raised.
Yes, I was going to bring up that very frog analogy. I love that one. And the sad part is, I think that the water starts boiling. I think we're placed in it whenever we enter school. It's not just in the workplace. It's like kindergarten on up. And it's this slow ramp up of so much of your time and energy being spent towards work that by the time you're actually out there working, you think, oh, this is great. Now I'm getting paid money to do this versus doing it for free.
Right. You know, it's all worth, you know, it's worth the experience. That's why we're here. But it's true. We do, when you take it back to school and we take it back to sort of the early education, and perhaps this is where we can talk about that foundation and understanding of health. You know, what we're taught is that we need to sit and stay focused for 8 hours a day. You know, we remove things like movement and music and creative expressions from schools based on budgeting and remain with this diligent pursuit of intellectual achievement while being fed the food-like substances that are often found in the cafeterias across the United States. And it's you bring up a very poignant message about how early this really does begin.
Truly. And, you know, some people in your family system, your parents may not have learned healthy habits. And so there's an understanding there of like that knowledge was not passed down to them. But in a school system run by the state, you would hope there would be some introduction of healthy habits. But I tell you what, I had a medium French fry and a large cookie every single day for lunch for years, right? I mean, there were vending machine snacks, the honey bun, all of that. I honestly don't know how my body continued to function. And that's frankly kind of how I feel in retrospect, reflecting on my time in the corporate and startup space. I actually don't know how I physically functioned looking at what I put my body and my mind through then compared to how my life is now.
Well, I think there's so much of us, and that's where we end up having these conversations that sound, you know, I talk with my patients in my office all the time, and I'll ask them, you know, if they have headaches, and the answer will be the normal amount, or do you feel fatigued? No more than usual. And we have sort of adapted, just like this frog in the boiling water, we've adapted our level of health and expectation to meet the common denominator of hyper-focused, non-moving, under-fueled lifestyle that we have been trained in from early childhood. So of course there's an average amount of headaches, and I'm just hitting the normal on this one. How do we survive in that? So how did the light bulb go off for you? Because it sounds like at the moment of change, you know, when you went on your Eat, Pray, Love journey, that you didn't quite have the answer to what you were looking for. You just knew it wasn't what you were doing right then.
Yeah. So it was almost like the lack of fulfillment that it had me turn the door handle and walk through. And so I went on this journey. I had no idea what I would find. And I ended up on retreat with a group of people who were just a lot I don't know if I would say further along the path, but yes, further along the path of health and wellness. They had more knowledge, and it wasn't just traditional health and wellness. It was some of the more alternative methods as well. And I had never been exposed to these before in my life. And so to be there and to understand that there was a different way to think about things, there was a different way to have expectations of yourself and those around you. There was a way to regulate your nervous system and to understand how your nervous system like played a role in your life, to know that your thoughts, even something as simple as your thoughts, are not always true, right? Something mm-hmm. that silly is something that is never taught to us, but it's so incredibly helpful whenever you realize it. So there was that mental health component. And the interesting thing is that the physical side of things, the physical health, didn't activate for me until I got back and I became incredibly ill mm-hmm. right after that trip. And the tie of the mental and emotional to the physical body, I really think it was, I saw such a big gap between how I had been living my life and how I wanted to be and what I could be doing, that something physically got activated in me. I can't even explain it to you, where I was in and out of the doctor's office. I thought I had a heart attack one night and had to go to the ER. I could barely walk for a month because I had extreme tension and pressure in my legs and my calves with tightness in my chest. And I think with many people, their health journey can start with an illness or something where they think, wow, I need to take a step back and figure out what this is. And for mm-hmm. me, I started pulling on the thread through acupuncture because no one could figure out what it was that was working. And I started with acupuncture and pulled on that. And then he was like, let's change up your entire diet. Let's give up alcohol. Let's give up caffeine. Let's do all these things. And from there, I mean, wow, just the world just completely opened up to all the possibilities of the changes I could make.
Well, acupuncture is such a fantastic place to start. I love in alternative medicine how we have so many different systems that when everything seems to be connected and nothing in and of itself seems wrong, taking an approach that addresses the whole system globally is such a practical way to begin. And in a way, you know, that really speaks to one of the foundational differences between traditional medicine and disease management as we know it, and some of these alternative modalities, where traditional disease management takes each system individually and houses them individually. The training is individual. They don't overlap at all. So looking at us as a whole person, whole body experience is a rather foreign concept. More and more so, we're starting to see more research around that in areas like autoimmune disease, but certainly 5, 10, 15 years ago and beyond, that absolutely didn't exist. But I really like, and I want to draw some more attention back to how you had this shift through your mental, emotional changes, and that the health, the physical health came after. I think that's something that, you know, we don't talk about often enough. It's one of those personal anecdotes that gets shared. But when we think about it, when our body is in a constant stress state, you know, its goal is to survive, is to get through that stress state. And as you and I have been talking about, that stress state training begins at very, very early ages. And so long as you tell your body, we have to keep going, we have to keep going, man, it's going to scrape the bottom of the barrel just to do it. But when you say, okay, never mind, we're going to do something different, we're going to rest, you know, all bets are off, and your body is finally going to ask for and tell you what you need. It's why, you know, we push through to get to a deadline or get through final exams only to end up having the flu right after, or how many people got sick right after their weddings or a big move or something like that. We can make it through until we can't. So tell us a little bit more about how that journey continued for you.
Yes. I mean, this resonates. It goes all the way back to, it's almost like being in fight or flight for your entire life and then deciding, oh, I can step back from this, and feeling your body just, show you all, it has all the alarm bells ringing. Pay attention mm-hmm. to me, pay attention to me. And it took me a few years even to realize that my body wasn't against me. It was never doing anything to hurt me, to harm me. It was just saying, hey, pay attention to this. Hey, we need to address this over here. Hey, you know, like this habit's not working. And so instead of thinking like, oh, I need to be resistant to what's happening, I started learning to listen as things popped up, and they popped up over time, and they each led to a new decision. So getting off of most of my, you know, medications that perhaps I didn't need to be on, being very mindful about what I put into and on my body, my environmental factors. I cannot stand the smell of like an artificial Christmas tree in a car nowadays, you know, because I don't touch anything with those strong fragrances. But it's so interesting how your body is so magical that it can put up with so much for so long, and you think it's normal. And then you remove those stressors from your life mm-hmm. and you suddenly realize that a very different state can exist for you, and it feels so much better.
It's amazing. And I think that brings up a really important distinction, is that I think when we talk about taking away all these environmental toxins or being more careful about what we put in our body, there's a little bit of an assumption or a reputation of these, quote, I'm going to use generous air quotes, these people become so sensitive. And the reality of it is that we are all rather sensitive, but choosing, and I'm going to oversimplify this because it's not just the Christmas tree air freshener. I mean, it could be, but it's not just the Christmas tree air freshener, but it's sort of you choosing, listening to your body and saying, I can either sit with this artificial fragrance of the Christmas tree freshener and have a headache, or I cannot and not have a headache. And now that I have opened myself up to the option, I'm going to choose the no headache. Don't you want to join me?
That is huge. The choice, having the choice and not knowing you had it before.
So what was that like for you? Because you brought up that foundational understanding of health and how it was missing from your childhood, that your perception of health was an iced tea over a soda, you know. What was that kind of rubber meets the road of redefining everything you knew or thought you knew about health, and everything you thought you knew about symptoms and that they should be managed versus listened to? How did you reconcile that?
It's funny, pre the illness that I'm speaking of, any attempts at wellness there was a lot of resistance. I mean, it was like pushing a boulder up the hill, like, oh, this salad is disgusting. Like, oh, I don't want to do this. I'm just going to get the cheese fries instead. I'm so hungover, all this stuff. But it wasn't until I gained a really clear understanding of not just, oh, this is for like your health in general, and this is so that you can, you know, lose weight or whatever, but to truly understand how important holistically it was to feed my body the fuel that it needed, that moving your body isn't just building muscle, that it's all so interconnected on so many different levels. And I was serving myself in a variety of different ways to go out and do the yoga, to have the salad, not just like a Caesar salad, but to have a variety, like a rainbow of veggies, and to eat them with the intention of like, I know that this is serving every cell in my body right now. You know, like that is a very different type of healthy eating. And so it was that transition that happened for me with the education I received and that I saw and that I started to crave after that illness, after that trip. And it was the choices that I realized that I had. And then there was a time of intense frustration, because I realized even though there were choices open to me, I became frustrated that I had never been taught this before. And I became frustrated that I would walk into a grocery store and I could only eat like 10% of the food in there because so much of it wasn't actually food.
So many food-like substances on our grocery shelves. It's true. I think there's, as my mom likes to say, you can't unring the bell, that as soon as you start to see what the reality is, you see the flaws in our priorities, you know, strewn across the grocery shelves. And I like something that you were sort of talking about in terms of, it's not just for this one thing. The choice that you're making isn't just to tick a box, but in a way, that these healthy choices that we're making need to be applied as holistically as the way that the care is perceived, But if we are thinking about my workout is to make my muscles bigger, we are taking our body just as piecemeal as the disease management system that's trying to treat everything in isolation to begin with. But if we know that healthy movement, encouraging movement is for our muscles, our heart, our lungs, our mental health, our digestion, everything, it becomes a little bit more palatable, like the salad turned out to be.
Yes, you start to crave it. You think like, oh, this is so good for me. And I know I will feel great on the other side of it.
And so did that end up changing the perspective with which you dove in doing more and more? Did it end up being more and more hard work, or did the boulder suddenly turn from going uphill?
I would say, just as with anything that's new, in the beginning, it felt a bit overwhelming. Because there was so much shifting after 30 years of living, eating, moving, or lack of moving, working, thinking one way, there's almost like an unlearning involved in this. And so instead of just bringing on something new, there's releasing addictions and habits and things that may have served me in the past, may not have, but certainly are not what I want to bring forward into the future with me. So there was a hard, challenging time in it that felt almost like two boulders, or maybe like I'm trying to throw one boulder away while acquiring a new one. But after time, it just became the baseline, right? So with alcohol, for example, I choose not to drink anymore for a variety of reasons. And for about a year, it was extremely challenging because of all of the social conditioning around it. But I just hit a point where I no longer had to fight it anymore. It naturally, organically became where I no longer desired it anymore. And when that shift happens to where you're not just like convincing yourself or guiding yourself towards something, but it's your natural desire, that's when it just became easy. And that for me happened after about 2 years of this work.
That's fantastic. And I'm so glad you brought up the unlearning and the releasing, because I think so often we think about healthcare and wellness and the wellness journey as the litany of things we need to do. You know, we need to do this more. We need to change the way our diet moves. But at the core of all that, you are changing the values that guided how you treated your body. And that is a lot of work. And I don't think we give enough credit to what that unlearning, releasing, for me, I will say, the forgiving of what you didn't know and what you didn't give yourself before, and the even a little bit of grieving about all the years spent in pain and suffering, wishing that you could have done something different. So not to put words in your mouth, those last two were mine, but you had the unlearning and releasing. And I think that needs to be at the forefront of our conversation about changing the way we view health.
Yeah, your words really resonate with me. There's almost like a little bit of guilt or shame that showed up whenever I thought, oh my gosh, I've been doing this to myself for so long. And then there's the anger of like, well, why didn't someone teach me whenever I was a kid? And all these feelings that you have to move through in order to get to the other side of like, okay, well, I'm choosing now moving forward. Like there's no time like the present to make the shift. And that's what I choose.
Yeah. And to me, it feels a lot like a relationship. A piece of dating advice I got long, long ago was that, you know, marriage is a choice that you make every morning. And I feel like that's true. And I feel like that health is also a choice that you make every morning. And sometimes, you know, it's easy to think maybe I'll just fall back into old habits. Maybe it's easier not to make the choice today. But it is that daily reminder that makes it seem easy and second nature after a while.
And I will say that there's something about the journey of you're still going to slip up. You know, I'm still going to wake up and be like, I really want to eat something horrible for me. And I don't want to work out for like, you know, 2 weeks or whatever it is that comes up. And as you learn more and more forgiveness that's sort of activated by that initial big burst of like guilt and shame, you learn to be more forgiving to yourself and think like, this is a part of the process and I'm not perfect. And it's okay if I eat like a non-organic, non-vegan meal every now and then. You know, my body is resilient. It will survive. I'm not going to beat myself up over it, because having that mentality of like being overly strict or having guilt or shame around it is probably going to be even more harmful to the body than ingesting the thing to begin with.
Oh my goodness. I am so glad that you brought up that point. I mean, we can start to get a little fixated and neurotic about doing everything perfect, as if the behavior, the perfection of what we are demonstrating is the point. And instead, what you just brought to is this idea of forgiveness and resiliency around your body, is that you're actually listening to yourself and knowing, you know, where the rope runs out. And taking that space as it belongs to you. You know, when we shame ourselves for not working out every day because it's been a rough week and I'm tired and I'll pick it up again next week, that's how we can get into these, as you put, shame and guilt cycles of, well, now I haven't worked out for a week and I feel guilty, and that's going to spin into another 2 weeks, rather than taking the value judgment out of it and just letting it be what it is. It is not good nor bad, but it is a thing that I am doing or not doing. And now I feel like it's time to start doing it again. Or that one giant cheeseburger was enough, or any example in there.
And I've even found that shame comes also along. I think there are a lot of parallels with health and with work. Mm-hmm. And so tying it back to that journey where, you know, it started with, okay, I don't feel fulfilled. And then it went to mindset, and then it went to the physical, and then it went full circle back to the work. Mm-hmm. And I had to realize that the new health, the new lifestyle that I wanted to lead, the habits I wanted to have, for me personally, they didn't align with the workplace that I was in, the corporate structure that I was in, without access to like sunlight and freedom to honor my rhythms and the ability to connect with people in a human way. Because I think, you know, there's almost like in the corporate and startup space, there is that, as you mentioned, it's almost like in a silo, like symptom diagnosis. It's like, okay, you're a producer, you're a cog in the machine. You're not the full human. You're not your full self. Mm-hmm. And so it's difficult to show up as your full self. And since you've been in this machine for so long, whenever you do decide to leave it, or even if you show up in your personal life and you take some time for like vacation or something like that, there's a shame around the productivity perfection.
Mm.
And the addiction to the stress. And then you have to unlearn that as well.
And what you're bringing up here is such a big part of another way that we have tried to silo different aspects of health, is that, you know, health is about mind, body, and spirit, or mind, body, emotion, however, whatever term around spirit, you know, most moves you. But to think that we can separate all of these things is a part of the big kind of fantastic cultural lie that we are in. And so once you start making good choices about the food or the way you move your body, you see it's just not compatible with this end stage capitalism that we're in. It becomes its own version of walking through the grocery store and seeing food like substances on the shelf. And then you see, you know, this company, this business engagement where it's like, oh, here's your purpose and fulfillment. You're like, that's purpose and fulfillment like substances. I'm not into that anymore. So how do you find a way to weave all these pieces together, you know, once the blinders are off?
I think it starts with understanding what you want outside of what is almost provided to you is what you should be doing, to release the shoulds, the coulds, the wouldas, the whatever, and just think, okay, with the knowledge that I have, with the way that I want to feel, with the life that I want to live, what is my ideal day like? What is my mm-hmm. ideal life like? And to realize that, for me personally, I had this major realization that as I was taking better care of myself, it was misaligned with the work I was doing. And that, to your point, work is not separate from life. They are the same. Any moment that you're spending in this life, in the existence, that is your life. And that is such a great lie, like work-life balance. Like, it's all your life. Every moment is your life. And to think that work is separate from your life is almost to say that someone else owns your life during that time, and that you don't own it. So there's like a sovereignty that has to come into place of like, what do I want to choose? And then you go about creating it.
Ah, you just, those words just let me, I just, when you're throwing, it's like that you're letting someone else own your life for those 9 to 5 hours, which especially with the advent of technology, the bleed over has been extensive since we could start carrying around iPhones and Blackberries and whatever in our pocket. You know, the idea of taking back sovereignty of what you are, what you want, what drives you. I couldn't think of a better word to encapsulate what this whole movement is really about. It's sovereignty over your body and your health, and accepting that the average number of headaches is not appropriate for you, or the average amount of fatigue is not where you're at, or the fluorescent lighting without the ability to have real human emotions between the hours of 9 and 5 is not going to fill you up anymore. This whole idea of sovereignty is incredible, and also seems like a whole lot to ask for yourself if you've never tried it before.
Mm-hmm. It is a fundamental lie that we have to struggle and earn and work for peace, joy, happiness, health, well-being.
And the rewards. I thought those were the rewards. Is that the rewards?
Yeah, you get that whenever you're 75 after you retire, after you toil. Yeah, it's like it's wild how we've been programmed to think about it. And if we think about it, actually all those things exist in the absence of work, which I can start doing right now and transforming my work and how I create money to survive and to fulfill my needs and all of that, how I can transform mm-hmm. that and repackage it in so many different ways. That's when the power really lights up. You have to believe it, that it's okay, mm-hmm. that you're worthy of it.
And that goes right back to that sovereignty. And so I think I really want to highlight, I mean, everybody who's been listening has been along for the journey of your health, but to really highlight that this wasn't something that, well, the light bulb did go off one day and you're like, okay, I'm out of here. I'm peace, love, praying it. But it wasn't like you woke up and said, you know what? I am a sovereign being in my body. I got this. There, like you said, like we talked about, there's been a lot of learning and unlearning, releasing, forgiving, and new habits. This is a dedicated process to arrive here. And I think these ideas, I think I'm going to age myself, but what are the kids calling it these days? The Instagram glow-ups, this idea that you can just disappear for a moment and come back fabulous. That's again a falsehood. It's a lie of, you know, it doesn't take this dedicated work or awareness of your own worthiness, but you better go tick all of these boxes, get your hair done, go get a facial, go change, you know, get a makeover. And now you've got your glow up. They are in contradiction to each other. It is a rebellious act to do it your way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I found that there's almost like a equal, almost balanced shadow to every bright light that you introduce. And the more that we shine the light on the positive things, the good things, engage in those good habits, eat healthy, all of that, the more that it brings up the parts that maybe are really difficult and that we want to avoid. And you kind of have to navigate both in order to move through them and to get to the, I guess I would say, the next level of your health, mm-hmm. of access to what is possible for you.
So tell us a little bit more about that, navigating both, and then maybe we can arrive at how you have found not a work-life balance, but a balance within yourself.
Mm-hmm. So I think the big thing that I learned in navigating the light and the dark side of it was that it's a constant ebb and flow. And you're going to feel, I personally felt like I was taking steps back, you know, like, oh, I'm doing so well, but I haven't worked out, my immune system's crap right now. I'm overworking. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And then being like, okay, I'm just going to get back on the horse. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, instead of just this constantly upward trajectory, it's like these big loops that you're taking, like you're on a roller coaster and you're going through. And, you know, part of it is that you just have to say, okay, that was the past. I did that. It's fine. I'm still going somewhere. I'm still being intentional. I'm still making decisions. And for some of my practices, still to this day, I struggle with like, okay, daily meditation. I know how much that does for me. It's so important for me for a variety of ways, but still to this day, I wake up and I'm like, nope, you know, but it's just the ebb and flow, and it's never going to be like super easy, you know, because mm-hmm. you're always going to be up leveling and introducing new things. And that is growth. Like that is life. That's what I feel. It's just, you just keep going. And so at one stage I realized the work side of things wasn't compatible with the lifestyle thing, nor was it fulfilling to me. And I had a runway. I was fortunate enough to have saved up a financial runway and I just quit. I put in my 2 weeks notice the day after my bonus hit. And interestingly, that was also 2 weeks before COVID came to the US. And the last day that I was in the office, it was the day that they told everyone at my company to stay home. So I was the only person in the office on my last day. So
love that timing can sometimes just be serendipitous in a way.
It was. And in the moment I was kind of like, oh crap, like I'm going out to start my business and this is happening. But I could not have asked for, you know, notwithstanding all the tragedy and the trauma and all of that, but just like my own personal experience of the gift of being able to sit in my apartment and do nothing and mm-hmm. really like not have any temptations to do anything else because there was nothing else to do. We were all sitting in our apartments. Mm-hmm. But to have that happen at that exact aligned moment where I got to heal from the productivity, that was a big challenge. I would wake up with anxiety, like, oh, I'm not like doing anything. I'm just being. Like, how dare I? I'm not being. How am I earning my keep on this planet? You know, there's like worthiness tied up in that. And mm-hmm. instead I got to redirect that energy into a very long, drawn out morning routine of yoga and meditation and journaling and reading and making a healthy smoothie with a million supplements and all the things. And it would take me till like 2 or 3 PM. And I'm like, how is anyone ever healthy if it takes me till 2 or 3 PM to get through my health process of the day?
I mean, fair point. It's a fair point. We can get really caught up in like, this is a forever long list to do. But I'm assuming that it still doesn't take you until 2 o'clock to get ready for your day.
No, I realized that, yes, that was great, but you just kind of pick and choose as you go from the menu of healthy options.
Some days it is the nutrient-packed smoothie days, and some days it is the meditation and grab some toast and hard-boiled egg out the door. Like we can't be perfect every day. And you've mentioned this before, but I just want to keep highlighting it because we put so much pressure on this. I am healthy. I am now untouchable and perfect, but none of us live on the mountain.
No, not at all. And it was nice to have that time to, I kind of liken it to establishing a stronger baseline, a stronger foundation, something that's naturally easier to like go back to whenever you stray mm-hmm. instead of the opposite being your natural desire. Mm-hmm. But once I had the opportunity to establish a health baseline in the absence of all this work and the absence of something taking up my time. And then suddenly this is something magical that happens when you have space. I had all this creativity and all these ideas I had never had before. And through that, my business was born.
Well, and I think this brings up another really important part of holistic health. And that it like, you're just the journey of holistic health. It's beautiful here that, you know, we can't be in survival mode and creation mode at the same time, down to the very physiological level of our cells. They can either be surviving and culling and getting through the chronic stress or high stress or whatever have you, or they can be growing and creating, but not both, because both require energy. And so I'd like any of us who are listening to think about, you know, these suggestions of, if only I would dream of becoming, but I don't have the space, the energy, the drive, the ideas, the creativity, fill in the blank. I would ask us to sort of flip that story a little bit, flip that script and ask, is there something that I feel like I am just in survival mode? Do I not have room to do this because I am under so much pressure? And then that invites a little bit of this journey of unlearning, releasing, and forgiving on our way to a person that you know is waiting for you.
Yes, there's something about, I mean, I was fortunate enough to have the space to really unlearn and to create more time and space to welcome in that creative energy. But even if you can't, leave a situation, whatever it might be, that is putting you in a constant state of fight or flight and like removing your ability to sort of like go out there and take the next step. There are boundaries. Boundaries are so big, and figuring out how you have power in any given situation and you can change the dynamic of it, even if you can't completely remove it. And then also thinking about, I lost my train of thought.
Starting with boundaries, and I love this acknowledgement that we aren't all in a position to just get up and walk away. In fact, many of us are not. And even those throughout the pandemic who had the good news, bad news of no longer having a job, for some, that was the respite they had been dreaming of. And for others, that was the panic of how on earth am I going to feed my family and pay rent? There is a privilege, as you've acknowledged, there is a privilege in some of these choices. But what I like that you're getting to about boundaries is that, you know, on the one hand, you did a giant overhaul of everything, kind of made that, in a sense, your own career, this healing career for a few years. But in the absence of that, we can take things on one thing at a time. And the same lessons about learning, unlearning, releasing, grieving, establishing new habits, finding forgiveness for the shame of not always being perfect. We can apply these to one skill, two skills at a time. And for everybody, they are accessible. For everybody, they can include things like establishing boundaries. Boundaries for yourself that might start off like, I'm not going to answer my phone after 10 o'clock. Then move it to 9 o'clock. Then how about 7? What about 6? What are other things that you teach? Because you teach about finding success and health and happiness in business while not sacrificing your health. What are some of these things that you teach your clients?
Yes, it's all about identifying your power in any given situation, especially when you feel powerless. So if you're currently employed, this means identifying if someone's encroaching on a boundary or you're feeling a certain way in a dynamic, there's ownership of two parts. One, how you can share with them how their behavior or, you know, it, calling you at a certain time or having certain expectations of you, how, you know, that is not going to fly moving forward in a kind way. And then there's also the part of how you internalize what's happening outside of you and how you think about it. So I have clients who are business owners, and if you looked at their world, you would see that they're actually highly successful on paper. So everything that they want to be happening is happening, and the things that they don't want to happen are not happening. Yet in their mind, with the way that they're thinking about things and the expectations and that, the programmed self-limiting beliefs and stuff like that, they don't believe that they're successful at all. And so the inner world is not matching the outer world. So there's two parts. How can I actually shift my outer world as much as possible? And how can I shift my inner world such that it is representative of the positive in my outer world? And maybe even beyond that, maybe I'm like already 3 steps ahead in my inner world. And I know that this abundance is coming to me, even if I'm not completely experiencing it right now.
Oh, that's fantastic. And to bring up both of those pieces, yes, there are things that we can try and change in our environment, but there are also, these pieces that we have taken on very much internalized about what is succeeding and what is failing. We had a conversation with another guest a few weeks back when we were talking about this idea that everything has to be tied up in the measurement of how much money you are making, and that is going to be a success or a failure. When is that really the right measuring stick to use for what you're looking for and what's going to make you happy in that sense of inner world and health and your own goals, not the goals that are ascribed to you?
Yes. And the money is a tool, right? And in a way, it is a tool to gain access to certain elements of health, like healthy food. There's a cost. I don't think it's necessary, by no means necessary. There's always a workaround. But if you're really diving into the health and wellness world, there's a cost, whether it comes in the terms of time, the time you're spending on it, or the investments you're making to learn about it, et cetera. And so whenever you think about money as a tool, what I try to help people understand is that it's not that constant pressure that we've been programmed with of like more. It's writing down what you want your life to look like, understanding what you want in terms of health, in terms of wellness, in terms of free time, in terms of connection, travel, and of course, stuff too. Stuff comes in there as well. But writing that all out and assigning a number to what it actually looks like for you to have all of the freedoms that you enjoy. And once you see that, people realize like, oh, it's not as much as I thought. Like, I don't need to have $5 million to have exactly the life that I want, to have exactly the access to what I want. And so whenever I help people realize that there are numbers assigned to the lifestyle that they want and that they can build a plan to actually build up to that, then suddenly they're liberated from this sense of like, I can never do it. It's impossible.
And how often do we find that we are trading happiness and health in the moment for the drive of something it turns out we don't even need? And so there we have that meeting of external and internal. And these are simply choice points where we can dramatically increase our health and happiness without spending a dime, with thinking about spending dimes and realizing we need fewer of them. And this will circle right back to what you were saying at the beginning about realizing how intimately connected your mental health, your physical health, and your emotional health really are, that we can create this perceived stress that will weigh us down and help make us lose sleep at night. And really, it's all in our heads.
It so is. The thing that I like to help, it's so simple when you really drill down to it. To me, it comes into pure presence. Mm-hmm. Whenever you're doing something with intention, when you're like work, for example, with your business or whatever it is, being intentional about doing your best in that moment. When you're relaxing and resting, being just as intentional and present about, okay, I'm eating my food right now. You know, I'm moving my body right now. I'm resting. I'm connecting with another human right now, because we try to multitask everything. And whenever we do that, we're never going to quite get what we need out of the work, the doing, and we're never going to quite get what we need out of the being. But if we can just stay present with everything in every moment, their intention, then we get so much more out of life and health and wellness and everything.
I know, and you know, that goes right to the heart of wishing that we had more time in the day. So if you spent it, if you spent all of your attention on the one moment you're in, you wouldn't be, you know, looking for that other half later. It's right there, right in front of you. Oh, thank you so much for coming and sharing so much of what is a very personal journey with such productive and empowering things to teach as a result of that. Can you leave us with just a few thoughts of what are, you know, we talk about being present in the moment and looking at those boundaries. If you were to give our listeners here today just one thing to start enacting in this monumentous personal journey, what would that be?
I would highly recommend setting up a regular routine container to pull yourself out of the weeds and focus on what you want, to be intentional. Maybe that's 30 minutes every morning. Maybe it's an hour once a week, whatever it is that you have to spare. If you can just give some time to being highly intentional about your health and planning and wanting and get yourself out of your routine and your pattern, then you're going to really lay a strong foundation. It's a great start.
Oh, I love that. The gift of just a routine container to fill with something intentional for you. I think that just gives so much possibility within the gift of free time, as it would almost turn out, but intentional free time. Very, thank you so much. Where can our listeners learn more about you and learn more from you?
Yes, you can find me on my website, which is jeripaige.com, GERIPAIGE, and also on Instagram at jeripaige.
Fantastic. Well, to all of our listeners here today, I really hope that you found something to take away with you today. As we find through all of these conversations with brilliant people I've had the pleasure of interviewing over the last 3 years, it's not the phenomenally complicated things that make a difference in our lives. It's the simple, diligent changes and the inner work that can amount to so much health and so much possibility in the moment right in front of you. So I hope you got a little something to take away with you today, and we'll see you next week for another episode of the Healing Ground Movement Podcast. Be well.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help.